Hey everyone, welcome back to Zara's Tech. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Markus. And today we are doing the big one.
The big one. Here's the thesis. You hear it at every tech conference, usually after the second beer. Europe is walling itself in. GDPR. NIS2. The AI Act. The Digital Services Act. We build a legal fortress. Companies are forced to be compliant. But compliance is not innovation.
And our job today is to try to poke holes in that. Because it sounds great, it fits on a bumper sticker, and it's about half true.
Which half though?
That's the episode. But wait a second, Sarah. Who are we anyway? And why this whole fuss?
Good question. Okay, who are we? I'm Sarah, business analyst, social media lead and blogger. We are working for a German ICT company, small to mid-sized. I basically grew up on the web. My roots are quite international, but I was born here, raised in the Ruhr area, studied economics in Berlin. I joined the industry in 2010 and I love it. That is the point. We cannot lose track. Not against US giants and definitely not against AI and agents. Otherwise, it gets mega slow here.
Exactly. And I'm Markus, not a pure techie, not a real analyst, just Gen X. I remember technology before the internet. I take a pragmatic look, especially after my corporate years. It was a joint venture, a US tech firm and a German media giant. Now we work at a regional provider. Sure, we aren't IONOS or GoDaddy, but we play along and we look across borders. We understand the craft, we know the business. We get what moves admins and small businesses. This whole AI shift, it's a heavy lift.
Oh, absolutely. No cheap ads here. We look closely. What do the big giants do? How do you keep control of your data? Do you even want to? What is the big picture in Eurotech? That is our show.
And that is why we check out the Brussels wall now.
Here's the plan. 5 stops. First, we walk along the wall. What did Europe actually build? Second, the numbers duel. What do innovation statistics really say? Third, we stop looking at Europe as a legal space and start looking at it as a market. Spoiler, it's a market full of copycats. Fourth, we zoom out. Because Markus and I realized something while preparing this.
We were being very German about it. BSI this, Telecom that. So we look at France, at the UK, at Norway. Very different answers to the same problem.
And fifth, how do we get out of this? One more thing before we start. There's a reason we're recording this now. August 2nd, 2026. In a few weeks, the EU AI Act goes fully live. Transparency rules, high-risk requirements, the countdown is running.
So, let's go look at that wall. Okay, you claim there's a wall. Show the bricks.
4 big ones. Brick number 1, GDPR, the foundation. Since 2018, everyone knows it, everyone hates the cookie banners. But here's the number that matters. Total GDPR fines have now passed 6 billion euros. 6 billion. That's not symbolic regulation anymore. That's an enforcement economy.
Brick 2?
NIS2. Cybersecurity. And this one is fresh. The German implementation law took effect in December 2025. No transition period, none. Before that law, about 4,500 companies were under supervision of the Federal Cyber Authority. Now it's 29,500.
Markus, that's more than 6 times as many. Overnight.
Overnight. 18 sectors, suddenly including machine builders and food producers. Fines up to 10 million euros or 2% of global revenue. And here's my favorite part. The registration deadline was March 6th, 2026. Guess how many companies actually registered?
Tell me.
About 11,500 out of nearly 30,000, not even 40%. And surveys say almost half of all companies don't even realize the law applies to them. We built a law that most of its targets either don't know or don't understand.
To be fair, the state itself missed its own deadline first. The EU wanted this transposed by October 2024. Germany was over a year late. Brussels opened an infringement procedure. That's why the final law came with zero grace period.
Right. The state was non-compliant with its own compliance law. Let that sink in. BRIC 3, the AI Act. World's first comprehensive AI law, risk-based, rolled out in stages, bans since February 2025, rules for general-purpose AI since August 2025. And on August 2nd this year, the big wave hits. Labeling duties for AI-generated content, full requirements for high-risk systems, fines up to 35 million euros or 7% of global revenue.
7%? That's higher than GDPR.
Noticeably higher. And BRIC 4. The Digital Services Act for the big platforms. This one has teeth now. 120 million euros against X for transparency violations. 200 million against Temu. Preliminary findings against Meta over child protection. The Commission has more than 120 people working on DSA enforcement alone. They declared 2026 the year of enforcement.
So, four BRICs. Data, security, AI, platforms. I admit, as a panorama, that's heavy. But now my first counter, and it comes from Brussels itself.
The plot twist.
Exactly. November 2025. The Commission presents the so-called Digital Omnibus, two packages meant to simplify its own digital rulebook. GDPR, data laws, incident reporting, and the AI Act. In May 2026, there was a preliminary deal to push back the deadlines for high-risk AI. And why? Partly because the technical standards companies need to actually prove compliance won't be ready until late 2026 or later.
Translate that. The EU regulated faster than it could deliver the measuring stick. They built the wall, they forgot to ship the ladder.
And the backstory is the Draghi report from September 2024. It's all in there. Around 100 tech-related laws. Over 270 regulators in the digital space alone. Draghi's advice was explicit. Simplify, without giving up fundamental rights.
So even Brussels now half confirms my thesis. The question is whether the diagnosis is right. Which brings us to the numbers.
Because here's where it gets interesting. Your thesis quietly assumes something. We regulate a lot. Therefore, we don't innovate. But do the statistics back that up? I checked, and I claim the core problem is something else entirely.
Go!
Start with capital. The EU attracts about 5% of global venture capital. 5. The US takes 52, China takes 40. And the consequence? Roughly 30% of European unicorns, founded between 2008 and 2021, moved abroad, mostly to the US. Not because of GDPR, because of money.
Explain that.
In Germany, between 2017 and 2021, only about 4% of venture capital came from pension funds. In the US, it's roughly a quarter. American Retirement Savings Fund, American Startups. Our savings sit in checking accounts. Draghi has a brutal line on this. European households save more than American ones, but their wealth has grown only a third since 2009. We have the money, it just doesn't work.
Fine, capital. What about R&D?
Same picture. Among the 500 biggest R&D spenders worldwide, the number of European companies just dropped from 132 to 126. The US has 135. Germany has 31. In the global top 10, there are exactly two Europeans, Volkswagen and Roche. Seven are American, and they can afford it. the five biggest US tech firms made 261 billion euros in operating profit last year alone.
And where does our research money go?
That's the key point. It's called the mid-tech trap. European R&D flows mostly into established industries, cars, chemicals, machinery, not into frontier tech. One number says it all. European companies account for just 7% of global research spending on software and internet. 7%. And 70% of the world's AI foundation models come from the US. We research a lot, but we research yesterday.
Okay, now I flip it. If regulation isn't the cause, why did the gap explode right after 2018? Right after GDPR?
Look at the rankings that contradict you. Global Innovation Index 2025. Number 1, Switzerland. 15th year in a row. Number 2, Sweden. Both European. Both inside or tightly coupled to the European regulatory space. The US comes third. Germany dropped from 9 to 11. But not because of regulation, because of weakness in digitization and venture capital, where we rank somewhere between 30 and 40.
So your verdict is?
Europe can innovate. Europe cannot scale. The ideas are born here. They just don't grow up here. And the prime suspects are capital shortage and a market fragmented into 27 pieces, not primarily GDPR.
Let me push back with a legal scholar, Christiane Wendehorst, definitely not a deregulation ideologue. She says, overregulation and deregulation are combat terms. There's good regulation and bad regulation. But, and here it comes, she says the real problems for AI development in Europe sit in data protection law and the case law of the European Court of Justice. And she describes a paradox I find spectacular. AI gets developed outside Europe, sometimes with European data, sometimes in outright violation of GDPR, and then it can be legally sold in Europe anyway, as long as the final product contains no personal data.
So the wall keeps out the development, but not the product.
Exactly. We export the value creation and import the result. The wall doesn't protect our market. It only ensures the building happens elsewhere. That's the most absurd possible configuration.
Can we agree on a checkpoint? Regulation is real and expensive. But it's the amplifier, not the cause. The cause is too little risk capital, fragmented markets, and research money stuck in the past.
Agreed. With a footnote. The amplifier is turned up to 11. And that leads straight into Act 3. Because now we look at what this setup did to the European tech market itself. So, Marcus, we always talk about the EU as a legal space. I want to look at it as a market for a moment. And something jumps out. Europe has no big tech companies, no platform giants. What it has instead, and I'm saying this deliberately, copycats. Providers rebuilding US cloud models. And now they're setting out to digitize the Mittelstand. Their core sales pitch, we're compatible with every EU law you can name.
We talked about before in a former episode. But still a strong claim. Wanna give us some evidence again?
Market structure first. Three US providers. AWS, Azure, Google. Around 70% of the European cloud infrastructure market. All European providers combined, 15%. And that share has been flat since 2022, despite the sovereignty debate, despite Trump, despite everything. And this market is huge. Estimates put it at 300 to 500 billion euros by 2030.
And the European players?
Look at their marketing. Deutsche Telekom is scaling up its public cloud and proudly announces. 80% of core hyperscaler features are already there. By end of 2026, we reach full core feature parity with the US providers. The success metric of Europe's flagship product is literally. How close are we to the American original?
That is the textbook definition of a copycat. Yes.
The Schwarz Group, that's Lidl for our international listeners, is investing around 11 billion euros in a data center in Brandenburg. Up to 100,000 AIPUs, stated goal, a scalable European alternative to the US hyperscalers. And the extreme case is the Delos Cloud, an SAP subsidiary delivering Microsoft cloud services to German government agencies under German control on Microsoft technology. Sovereignty as a German wrapper around American software.
Ouch.
And now the core of my thesis. What is the actual product here? In one survey, people were asked what data sovereignty means to them. 95% said GDPR compliance. Not performance, not features, not price. The law itself is the selling point. Providers literally advertise, compliant with GDPR and NIS2 by design. The AI Act even generates demand. If you run high-risk AI on US infrastructure, you have a documentation problem. The sovereign cloud solves it. My sharpest version of this, the wall is the product. Europe isn't building a better cloud. Europe is building a more legal cloud.
And notice who they're selling to, or rather, through whom.
That's the part that clicked for me while editing this. American tech goes through the individual, the user, you. Nobody forced anyone to use ChatGPT. OpenAI put it out there and 100 million people showed up in 2 months because they wanted it. AI for everyone. That was the ChatGPT moment. Honest question, where would AI even be today without it?
Still a research paper. And European tech?
European tech goes through the legislator. The pitch isn't. You'll love this. The pitch is, you're legally required to have this. Compliance is mandatory. The lawmaker is the sales department. Eurotechs get pampered by regulation. They never have to win the user. They only have to match the paragraph.
Which explains something we've danced around all episode. Why there's no European consumer tech giant. If your demand comes from obligation, you optimize for auditors, not for delight. Nobody ever fell in love with a product because it was mandatory.
Nobody unboxes a NIS2 audit. And that's the deeper cost of the wall. It trains a whole industry to sell to fear and duty, while the Americans train theirs to sell to desire. Guess which skill scales globally?
And the Mittelstand digitization?
Often isn't digitization at all. It's risk transfer. The machine builder with 120 employees who suddenly falls under NIS2. He's not buying innovation, he's buying protection. Against the regulator, against the data protection authority, against personal liability of his own management, which NIS2 explicitly introduces, by the way. A whole industry is growing around this. Virtual security officers, auditors, compliance platforms. Regulation created an industry, just a compliance industry, not a product industry.
Okay, my turn. Because your copycat contempt may have blind spots. Three of them. First, the Airbus argument. People are already calling this Europe's possible Airbus moment. Airbus started as a state-orchestrated copy of American aircraft. Today, it's a genuine world leader. Fast follower is a proven strategy. Samsung started that way. The entire Chinese cloud industry started that way.
Granted.
Second, copying at the infrastructure layer might even be rational. Cloud infrastructure is a commodity. Differentiation happens one layer up. And Europe does have originals there. SAP, Spotify, DeepL. Third, and this is my main point, the kill switch is not paranoia. The US Cloud Act gives American authorities access to data even when it sits in European data centers. In a world where Washington floats tariffs as leverage against European tech rules, rebuilding under European jurisdiction is not failure. It's an insurance policy. And nobody buys insurance because it's innovative.
Fair. Then answer me this. If the insurance is so valuable, why is the market share glued to 15%?
Switching costs. migrating away from a hyperscaler is expensive and messy. Proprietary formats, long contracts. But something interesting is happening right now, and ironically, it's regulation. The EU Data Act, fully applicable since September 2025. It forces cloud providers to enable data portability and easy switching. The switching costs. The strongest lock-in tool of the big three are losing their bite. That's a law that opens the market for European providers.
Which elegantly completes my thesis. For European providers, regulation is both things at once, the moat and the battering ram. GDPR and NIS2 create the demand for them. The Data Act kicks the customer's door open, and the Commission's work program already lists the next piece, the Cloud and AI Development Act, expected to steer public procurement toward European providers. That's not a free market anymore. That's import substitution by legal means.
Or it's industrial policy, like every other region on the planet runs it. The others do it with subsidies, we try it with paragraphs. And the most beautiful irony to close this act. Gaia X, remember? Europe's prestige cloud project. It never became a provider. It became a framework. Standards, labels, certifications.
Europe turned its infrastructure project into a compliance framework. If you want my whole thesis in a single image, that's it.
Okay, full stop. While we prepped this episode, we caught ourselves doing something.
We were being incredibly German. BSI Telekom, Schwarz Group, NIS, two paragraphs. So we asked, does the rest of Europe even see it this way? And the honest answer is, no, not at all. Europe runs at least three completely different playbooks.
Let's tour. Start with France.
France is the maximalist. They have the toughest national standard in Europe, SecNumCloud, issued by their cyber agency. For critical state data, only SecNumCloud qualified infrastructure is allowed. Microsoft 365 fails that test. Google Workspace fails it. And ministries are supposed to deliver concrete exit plans from US dependencies by autumn 2026. France treats this as industrial policy, always has.
And now the French own goal, because it's too good.
It's perfect. While all that is official policy, the French Education Ministry just renewed its Microsoft framework contract until 2029, up to 152 million euros. For products, its own rules ban for sensitive data. The ministry buys software it officially forbids itself to use.
The gap between sovereignty talk and procurement reality. In one contract. But France also produced the hybrid model, S3NS, that's Thales plus Google, and Bleu, Orange plus Capgemini, running Microsoft technology. Even SAP just launched its sovereign cloud for France on top of Bleu.
Keep that pattern in mind, we'll come back to it. Next stop, the Nordics, the Baltics, the Netherlands.
The pragmatists. Reports on the EU debate describe a clear split. France pushes the strictly European option. The Nordic and Baltic states and the Dutch prefer risk mitigation. Encryption, local backups, contractual controls. Regardless of the provider's passport, their logic? Full autarky is fantasy. Manage the risk instead.
Though even in the pragmatic North, things are moving. Denmark's digital minister announced the government is switching from Microsoft Office to LibreOffice. Lyon in France is going open source. And here's the anecdote of the episode. The International Criminal Court in The Hague is replacing Microsoft Office with a European platform called OpenDesk. Want to know why?
Tell it.
May 2025. The Trump administration sanctions the ICC's chief prosecutor and Microsoft blocks his email account. An international court. 125 member states suddenly unable to communicate because its infrastructure ran on American software. He ended up on a Swiss provider. That's the kill switch. Not as a thought experiment, as an incident report.
Even von der Leyen picked that thread up. In Davos, she compared Europe's dependency to the Nixon shock of 1971, when the US ended dollar-gold convertibility overnight and the whole system wobbled.
Now the really interesting contrast, the United Kingdom. Outside the wall since Brexit, same problem, completely different answer.
The numbers first. In the UK, AWS and Microsoft each hold 30 to 40% of the infrastructure market. The Competition Authority, the CMA, spent 3 years investigating and attested both of them significant unilateral market power. So far it sounds like Brussels.
But then it doesn't, because in March 2026 the CMA board decided, against the advice of its own inquiry group, not to impose binding regulation on cloud. Instead, it accepted voluntary commitments from AWS and Microsoft on egress fees and interoperability, and opened a separate probe into Microsoft's business software instead.
So London treats US clouds as a competition problem, something you negotiate with the companies, not as a geopolitical risk you solve by building your own industry.
And the contradictions are just as ripe as in Paris. While the regulator investigates Microsoft, the UK government signed a 5-year discount deal with Microsoft for Office, Azure and Copilot across the whole public sector. Smaller UK cloud firms call public procurement a competitive barrier. And here's the twist. The British cloud industry itself wants more regulation. In one survey, 71% of UK cloud providers supported urgent regulatory intervention.
The companies begging for rules. That's not a sentence you hear every day. And on data protection, the UK quietly stays close to GDPR. They keep their own version of it. Because losing the EU adequacy decision would cut off frictionless data flows. So Britain lives voluntarily in the shadow of the wall, without helping to build it.
One more European country, and this one fascinates me. Norway.
Norway is inside the wall without being an EU member. Through the European Economic Area, GDPR and NIS2 effectively apply there too. They are in the fortress. They just never voted on the blueprints.
And their dependency is extreme. 81% of Norwegian cloud infrastructure runs on US platforms. Hospitals, government agencies, schools, all on Azure, AWS and Google. But here's the Norwegian twist. They don't frame this as industrial policy like France. They frame it as national security. As part of total defense.
The digitalization minister said every organization needs a cloud exit strategy. There's a live debate about a national cloud, and the National Security Authority keeps warning about vulnerability. The punchline writes itself. Norway spends billions on F-35 jets and new submarines, while its digital backbone hangs on 3 American companies.
So, the tour in 1 minute. France. Sovereignty as industrial policy, with embarrassing procurement contradictions. The Nordics and the Dutch. Risk management over ideology. The UK. Competition law instead of sovereignty politics. Norway. Security doctrine. 4 playbooks, 1 problem.
Which raises the money question. If this market is real, who actually cashes in?
Let's do the winners list, because the pie is exploding. Gartner says European sovereign cloud spending nearly doubles, from about $7 billion in 2025 to over $12 billion in 2026, and hits $23 billion in 2027, tripling in 2 years. Group 1, infrastructure. Stack IT with its 11 billion euro bet, Telecom and T-Systems, OVH Cloud in France, IONOS, Hetzner, Scaleway, Exoscale.
Group 2, software. And the single biggest winner is SAP. Sovereign cloud offerings across Europe. The France launch on Bleu, partnerships with Capgemini, Soprasteria and Mistral, plus Delos for German government. And there's a quote from the trade press that could be the motto of this whole episode. For German enterprises, a sovereign SAP cloud is a strategic necessity, not because it's the better technology, but because it guarantees regulatory certainty.
Not better, more legal. I rest my case.
Group 3. The integrators. Capgemini, Soprasteria, Schwarz Digits. Positioning themselves as sovereign system integrators, the people who turn European infrastructure into working IT. Group 4. The open source ecosystem. OpenDesk, Nextcloud, Open Exchange, LibreOffice Service Providers. Real momentum there. Schleswig-Holstein in Germany already runs LibreOffice on nearly 80% of its administrative workstations and says it saves over 15 million euros in license costs.
And group 5, the one I keep flagging, the compliance industry itself. Auditors, certifiers, virtual security officers, plus the hybrid winners. And watch this closely. Bleu is Orange and Capgemini on Microsoft. S3NS is Thales and Google. Delos is SAP and Microsoft. Joint ventures where half the sovereignty premium flows straight back to Redmond and Mountain View. Microsoft even opened its own sovereignty studio in Munich this year. Think about that. The hyperscaler now sells the answer to the fear of the hyperscaler.
Selling the disease and the cure. That's a business model. All right, constructive part. 4 levers, fast.
Go.
Lever 1. Better rules, not fewer. Denderhorst proposes a European sovereignty check. Every law gets tested, concretely. On the legal technical level, does it help European sovereignty more than it hurts it? Only then does it pass. Plus the so-called 28th regime the Commission announced for 2026. A pan-European legal form for startups. Found your company once, operate identically in all 27 states. Digital by default.
That one actually targets the scaling problem from Act 2. I'll allow it.
Markus, Lever 2, the capital, the Savings and Investment Union. A first market integration package passed in December 2025. A reform of European venture capital funds is slated for 2026. Core idea. Root Europe's giant pool of savings, especially pension money, into European risk capital. Remember, 4% from pension funds here, 25% in the US.
That's the lever I trust least. We've been demanding a capital markets union for over a decade.
Fair. Lever 3. Demand. Nearly everyone agrees on this one, from industry associations to the Eurostack movement. The public sector is one of Europe's biggest IT customers. It should award a fixed share of strategic digital contracts to European, open, interoperable providers. Buy European. America has done Buy American for decades without blinking.
And lever 4?
Build. The Eurostack initiative wants around 300 billion euros over 10 years for a European technology stack. Chips, cloud, AI, connected to what already exists. And their motto kills the war metaphor in one line. Sovereignty doesn't mean isolation, it means having a choice.
One honest caveat, is Europe pulling in one direction here? No. France, Italy and Spain push hard for sovereignty. Other governments mostly want to avoid angering Washington. And Germany, of all countries, sides with the Commission's deregulation plans on GDPR. While the European data protection authorities warn those same plans could seriously weaken fundamental rights. We can't even agree whether the wall is too high or too low.
But there's one striking consensus. The European Parliament sovereignty report passed 471 to 68 across almost all political groups. Nobody seriously disputes the dependency anymore. The fight is only about the cure. More rules, fewer rules, or finally, some money.
And on that, I'll borrow from Christina Cafara of the Eurostack Initiative. Her line before the Berlin Sovereignty Summit. We need a course change, away from pure regulation toward investment and building digital infrastructure. No more position papers, just build.
Closing statements. Your thesis from the top. Europe walls itself in. Compliance replaces innovation. Where do you land?
I'll sharpen it. The wall exists. Four blocks of law, billions in fines, a compliance industry growing faster than the product industry. But the wall is not the cause of our weakness. It's what we build because we are weak. Whoever has no towers builds walls. And the twisted part? The wall itself became a business model. Part of our tech sector now lives off the fact that it stands. And after our tour today, I'd add, it's not even one wall. France polishes it. Britain negotiates with the people outside it. Norway mans it like a fortress. And Germany argues with itself about the height.
My version. Europe does not have an innovation problem. Switzerland and Sweden top the global innovation index. Europe has a scaling problem. 5% of the world's venture capital, unicorns emigrating, 27 fragmented markets, research money stuck in the mid-tech trap. If you only rant about GDPR, you're making it too easy for yourself. And if you defend GDPR without talking about capital and infrastructure, same thing.
So here's the question we leave you with. August 2nd, the AI Act goes fully live. 100,000 European GPUs are being installed in Brandenburg. Telekom promises feature parity. The Data Act is cutting switching costs. If the European cloud market share is still glued to 15% 2 years from now, then we'll know it was never about the wall.
It was about what we built behind it, or didn't.
Tell us where you stand, especially if you're in a mid-sized company right now, stuck between a NIS2 audit and a cloud migration. We read everything. All sources for today's numbers are in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. This was episode 7 in Sarah's Tech.
Take care. And remember, walls can be built from both sides. Ciao.
Welcome to the screen where the sparks will fly. Sarah's got the gadgets that'll make you sigh. Circuits hum and buzz like a neon glow. Step into the magic of Sarah's Tech Show. She's got drones that dance in the sky so high. Smartphones that blink like a firefly. AI whisper secrets only she can know. Let's plug into the world of Sarah's Tech Show. Buttons clicking, wires ticking, here we go. The future's in her hands, watch the current flow. Lasers beaming, screens are streaming all aglow. Get lost in the wonder of Sarah's Tech Show. Spinning out dreams in plastic. Her keyboard skills are nothing short of magic. Virtual reality, she makes it real. With Sarah on the mic, you'll feel the thrill. Binary beats sync with the heart of the crowd. Digital symphonies played loud and proud. The tech world's a stage where her genius will grow. Come ride the wave of Sarah's Tech Show.